Okay, the next case is number 14-1072, Creative Kingdoms, LLC, against the International Trade Commission and Nintendo. Mr. Barney.
And please, the Court. There are two patents at issue in this appeal, but today I would like to just focus on the 742 patent, which claims a motion-sensitive modular controller. And I'll begin with the Commission's enablement ruling. Now, as a reminder, there's no dispute that the 742 patent discloses an enabling embodiment of Claim 24. Specifically, Figures 14A and B and the accompanying text disclose a motion-sensitive modular controller that has two sets of tilt sensors, one set in the body portion that detects one type of motion, and another set of tilt sensors arranged in a different way in the removable handle portion that detect a second type of motion. So there's no question that Claim 24 is enabled. The only question is whether it's enabled for its full scope, which of course would also include other types of motion sensors, such as accelerometers and gyroscopes. Now, to answer that question, we have to go back to March of 2003, which is the effective filing date of the 742 patent. The question, or the precise question that has to be answered, is whether a person of ordinary skill in the art at that time, having the 742 patent as a guide, and importantly, with full knowledge of all the prior art that came before, would have been able to practice the full scope of Claim 24 without undue experimentation. Now, the date is critically important because the Commission relied very heavily on the testimony of persons working years before that date. For instance, it relied heavily on the work of Mr. Holt in 2000, 3 years before the filing date, as evidence of undue experimentation. But all of Mr. Holt's work would have been known to a person of ordinary skill in the art because it was prior art in 2003 when the patent was filed. In fact, Mr. Holt's patent and his commercial embodiment are both cited on the face of the 742 patent as prior art. Likewise, Dr. Nacker's work in the mid-1990s would also have been known to a person of ordinary skill in the art 7 years later when the 742 patent was filed. And that's not to mention the fact that Dr. Nacker actually wasn't a person of ordinary skill in the art.
But she was working with MIT engineers, I take it.
Well, her testimony was that she was working with MIT engineers, but they were not brought to testify at the hearing. So we don't know what they might have thought as to whether or not this experimentation was undue. The other point about Dr. Nacker is she was able, even 7 years prior to our filing date, long before the patent was filed, was actually able to build an embodiment that worked in less than 2 months. But as a matter of law, it's improper for the Commission to have relied on this testimony of people working in the art years before the claimed invention, because enablement has to be measured at the time of the claimed invention, not 7 years prior, not 3 years prior. And as you know, in many technologies, even 3 years can be a long time. And I remind the Court that 7 years ago, we didn't have iPhones, so things change quite rapidly. Now, the fact is that no one in this case can dispute, no one has disputed, no one can dispute, that the use of accelerometers and gyroscopes to detect motions in a handheld controller was well known in 2003. As one example, Sato, who worked for the Sony Corporation, disclosed that concept as early as 1995. And his patent discloses how to do it with multiple different types of motion sensors, including accelerometers, tilt sensors, gyro sensors, and other sensors. After that, we have references like Goshi, NIDA, Glynn, and many, many others, not to mention the work of Dr. Nacra and Mr. Holt. All of that would have been known to the person of ordinary skill in the art in March of 2003. And that's why Nintendo's expert was forced to admit that the art at that time was rich and that the use of accelerometers and gyroscopes in a handheld game controller was well known. So given that undisputed fact, and that is not a disputed fact, given that undisputed fact, this case falls squarely in the spectrophysics line of cases, which says that a patentee need not disclose and preferably omits what is well known in the art. And in predictable technologies, a generic claim limitation like, let's say, fastener or motion sensor can be enabled by a single embodiment. Now, here the use of electromechanical sensors to sense motion in a handheld controller was entirely predictable because it had already been done many times by many people prior to 2003. Now, the Commission recognized that fact, sort of acknowledged that, yes, the art was well known at the time, but it tried...
Do you think that the enablement is limited to those motion sensors that were known as of 2003?
No, Your Honor.
So So you enabled motion sensors even if those motion sensors had not been invented in 2003?
Yes, Your Honor. That's the law, that when you have an enabling disclosure, your patent enables what is known in the art at the time, and if somebody invents something new that falls within that claim that the inventor didn't know about, it can also fall within the scope of that claim. Now, that's not really an issue here because these...
What principle, where do you derive that principle from? I mean, you've claimed sensor very broadly. You've enabled, certainly, a certain type of principle, a certain type of sensor. You've mentioned other sensors. But if someone comes up with a much more sophisticated sensor, you have laid claim to that and have enabled it?
Well, Your Honor, first of all, the name of the case is not coming to me. I want to say AK Steel, but I don't think that's the correct case. I'll get to the site when I have a chance to sit down. I think that's the mainstream law, that a claim can enable embodiments that don't exist at the time that are invented later. If not, then it would be a very simple thing. As technology evolves over the course of 15 to 20 years, many, many claims would fall by the wayside. Something as simple as a fastener, somebody invents a new type of fastener that didn't exist at the time, just something as simple as a new type of rivet that didn't exist at the time, and suddenly they can practice your claim and not without infringement, claim your, and not only practice it, but claim that your claim is not enabled.
There may be a difference between a fastener and something like a mode of propulsion. If you claim a mode of propulsion in your claims and you say, and you enable a gasoline engine, have you claimed everything from a hybrid engine to all the way up to an ion projection device?
Your Honor, I think it's contextual and it depends on the type of claim that you're dealing with. But if mode,
it seemed to me you were making a categorical claim that you've enabled everything that falls within the category that you've just described.
I think it's contextual, and I think it depends on the type of claim that you're looking at and the relative importance and position of that particular limitation. I can certainly imagine a claim directed to a very complex system, and motor propulsion is just one small element of that and not a particularly central element to the claim. And then in that case, I don't see why motor propulsion wouldn't cover newly discovered embodiments. But again, I think we're getting far afield because that's not an issue here.
The claim, though, that you have doesn't just talk about using sensors. It talks about how they operate together. And doesn't that change your enablement analysis? You can't just say, well, there's some other sensors out there. You've got to say how they work together.
Your Honor, Claim 24 doesn't really talk about how they operate together. It requires an auxiliary portion that has a motion sensor, or an arrangement of motion sensors that detects one type of motion, and a base section that can detect another type of motion with another arrangement of sensors. And the sensors in that claim are generic. This is not a situation, for instance, like automotive technologies, where the claim was actually directed to a novel type of sensor that didn't exist in the art. Here,
well, the commission specifically pointed to the fact that they found that it was not clear from the prior art or not known in the prior art how an auxiliary component adapted to modularly attach to the elongated body input device, where the elongated body includes the first arrangement of motion sensors that detect the first motion, and where the auxiliary component is a second arrangement of motion sensing detectors that detect a second motion. In other words, there's activity that is actually in the claims. And so it's more than just saying we can have more than one sensor, or we can even have two sets of sensors operating at the same time. It's how they work together.
Your Honor, first of all, the commission there was quoting from the Patent Office reasons for allowance. And the Patent Office was basically stating that one of the reasons for allowance, and I would submit the most important reason for allowance, was the modular feature. And how do we know that? Because the prior art already had motion-sensitive devices. It had devices like Gauchy that had multiple motion sensors that could sense motion in multiple directions. Gauchy taught three or more accelerometers, each one of which is a motion sensor. So the prior art already taught motion sensors, multiple motion sensors working together to detect multiple motion. So that can't be the point of novelty of the claim. What was novel in the claim was this idea of modularly connecting or modularly building a controller where you could add additional motion sensing capability.
That doesn't apply to the 917 patent, right?
That does not appear. You're absolutely correct, Your Honor. I'm trying to focus my arguments today on 714.
It seems to me that there's a considerable difference in the strength of your argument with respect to the two patents. That's why you're focusing on the 942, I think.
I would not disagree, Your Honor. So going back to the 742 patent, another way we know that this that the concept of modularity was important and novel was that Nintendo itself, 18 months after we filed our patent application, they filed their own patent application for a modular motion-sensitive controller. And by the way, that application listed five of their top engineers, including the head of their R&D division. And they told the patent office at that time, 18 months after our patent was filed, that the concept of a modular motion-sensitive controller was a significant advancement in the art of video game controllers. And it's also worth noting that Nintendo, throughout this investigation, was not able to come up with a single anticipation reference against Claim 24, not a single one. And it wasn't for a lack of motion-sensing references in the art. The art is replete with motion-sensing references, and they asserted many of those references against us, including but not limited to Sato, Goshi, Holt, Nitta, Glynn, Lapston, and many, many others, plus the work of Dr. Nakra. What Nintendo was unable to find in the art throughout this entire investigation was the concept of a modular motion-sensitive controller, the concept that they themselves thought was so novel that they filed their own patent application on it in 2005. And so this case is not like, for instance, automotive technologies, where the point of novelty is the very thing that we're trying to enable by going to the prior art. This is a combination claim with many, many, many limitations, just one of which is the motion sensor limitation. We disclose an enabling embodiment of that motion sensor limitation that happened to use tilt sensors, and we explain that the inventors explain that a person of ordinary skill in the art would know how to use other motion sensors, which was absolutely true. And so with that, we submit that the commission erred in finding the claim invalid for lack of enablement. I'd like to move on to the commission's domestic industry ruling, if I may. And this is an important issue that's going to have implications for all complainants in the ITC. The commission's ruling is based on the notion that the interactive play environment of the Magic Quest game, which is the commercial embodiment we relied upon, is, quote, far removed from the technology protected by the patent. That's a quote from the commission's decision at page A67. But claim one of the 742 patent, which is our domestic industry claim, specifically recites an interactive play environment. Actually recites it twice, once in the preamble and once in the body of the claim, where it makes clear that the claimed wand has to be configured to work with an interactive play environment. Now, the commission said those are just statements of intended use. I disagree that at least the statement in the body of the claim is a statement of intended use. It's a positive claim limitation that has to be satisfied in order for the claim to be satisfied. But regardless, even if those are mere statements of intended use, as the commission said, they are highly relevant to the domestic industry inquiry.
It seems that the commission tried to give you a chance to satisfy this and asked for more information, more detail, sent it back for additional inquiry. And yet, ultimately, the commission felt it was just a failure of proof on your part.
Your Honor, I would disagree with that. That's not exactly what happened. We presented our evidence at the hearing. The evidence consisted of our witnesses, the spreadsheets of all of the financial information. Nintendo didn't cross-examine any of our witnesses. Neither did the commission. All that evidence just came in. It wasn't until 8 months later or 9 months later when we got the initial determination. And by the way, the staff, the OUII, supported our position. And so everything looked like it was not going to be a disputed issue. Nobody was even cross-examining our witnesses on this issue. We get to the initial determination, and suddenly the ALJ says there's no domestic industry. It was a complete and utter surprise, because even the OUII, the staff, said there was a domestic industry. So it was a surprise to us. It was a surprise to the staff. At that point, the record's closed. We couldn't put in new evidence. Nobody asked us for new evidence. You know, the spreadsheets say what they say. Our witnesses said what they said. And by the way, there was absolutely no dispute. I think there was some mud in the record about this, but there's no dispute that all of our expenses and all of our investments, except for the wand, were made in the United States. It was really just a question of granularity. Did we provide a finely granulated enough spreadsheet? But there's no question that all of the expenses. And so, for instance, I would point to page A1362, which is the testimony of Mr. Snyder, and he was asked about the components of Magic Quest, and he explained that Magic Quest includes an infrastructure portion and a wand. And the infrastructure portion includes the physical space, the Magic Quest effects, the back-end computer equipment, the software, and all the wiring and other infrastructure to make the system operate. So that includes the effects and the circuit boards and the software and the wiring, everything, with the exception of the wand. And then he said the wands, if you go to question 159, they ask, where are the components of Magic Quest manufactured? And he says the infrastructure portion of the game, which is all of that stuff I just mentioned, is manufactured entirely in the United States, either in our fabrication facility in Oregon or our on-site or our previous location in Florida or the on-site location at the Magic Quest facility, which is in South Carolina. So there's no question that all of those millions and millions of dollars that we invested to build that game, including the back-end software, including the circuitry inside those effects, was built in the United States. So yes, there's a question of whether we partitioned out or had a finally enough granulated spreadsheet, but there's no question that all of those expenses were paid in the United States. Now, what I think this comes down to...
Let's hear from the other side. We'll save you rebuttal time.
Thank you.
We've exhausted your time. Mr. Rosenzweig.
Thank you. May it please the Court. If I may, I'd like to spend a minute or two on written description and then switch over to domestic industry since I have limited time. Counsel for the appellant characterized this case as falling within the spectrophysics line of cases. The Commission submits that there aren't two separate lines of cases. There's the corpus of this Court's case law concerning Section 112. There are some cases that say that it's okay to omit what's well known in the art, that you don't want to include production details. If that's true, it's quite curious then that the patents in suit have production details for what was actually known to these inventors as far as the parts that were going to be procured and really in fine-grained detail. There's no dispute that that the inventors here did not know how to practice the full range of the invention, and I think it could be agreed that all that the inventors were trying to do was to stake positions beyond what they had actually invented. And I would just also like to add on written description that there appear to be claims in the 742 patent that do not seem to have these Section 112 problems. Independent claims 14 and 50 in the 742 patent cover tilt sensors with on-off states or active-inactive states, which certainly more closely correspond to the actual invention here. With respect to domestic industry, the Commission reasonably construed the statutory language that a domestic industry must exist with respect to the protected articles. The protected articles here are the toy wand, and this is discussed at the Commission opinion at pages A61, A63, and A72. In trying to indulge or entertain Creative Kingdom's arguments, parts of the opinion may be a little bit less clear with the benefit of a year of hindsight.
I recall the statute being so specific as to the article that it is quite specific that there must be a domestic industry.
Well, it says that there must be a domestic industry.
Is that a distinction that's critical to your view?
Well, the distinction is that with respect to the articles, has to be the articles themselves, the toy wands, and as the Commission found, certain limited other expenditures could also be associated or attributed to being with respect to the articles.
How would you characterize, give me the best characterization you can give of the scope of the certain other articles that are related to the patented protected article?
Well, the way that the Commission described it here, I think, is the fairest way, is that the domestic expenditure on what was central to enabling the toy wands would also count. This is...
essential to enabling, is that...
Central to enabling.
Central to enabling.
Central to enabling. So given that the toy wands output signals in a particular format, the Commission was willing to consider the receivers that receive those signals as well, but not the entire play area, which contains a lot of very elaborate designs.
But if, as a practical matter, let's assume as a practical matter, this wand would have no commercial value absent the elaborate play setting in which it is employed, as it is employed in this country. Why not regard that elaborate play context as being essential or central to the functioning of the wand,
well,
as an economic matter?
Well, as an economic matter, I mean, perhaps it could be, but as a statutory matter with respect to the articles and the previous subsection of Section 337 is, I think, relating to the articles, the statute requires a connection with the articles. In most cases, it's expenditure on the article directly that is sufficient.
Let me give you a hypothetical. What if General Motors owns a patent on windshield wipers, but it has those windshield wipers manufactured somewhere else, and they just get shipped in, and then they're stuck on the car, and they're you know, fully contained. All they have to do is be put on the car. Does it mean that General Motors doesn't have a domestic industry because it spends such a little amount of money to attach them to the car?
Well, it depends on what the nature of the article is, and the Commission has dealt with this in the floppy disk drives cases and other cases involving components. We could look, for instance, at whether the wiper blades are sold in the marketplace discreetly, including in aftermarket
depends.
Uses.
I thought I heard you tell us it doesn't depend in a particular context and article.
Well, what I was trying to say is that we're focused on the statute, and it seems that there are two separate questions here. The first is going to be defining what the appropriate article is, and the Commission here defined the article as the toy wand. The secondary question, and admittedly these two inquiries are a little bit clouded in the Commission's opinion, and I hope to help. The second inquiry is whether expenditures that are not discreetly in that toy wand are nonetheless with respect to it. And the Commission was willing to credit a good bit, but not the entirety of this play area with its castle, with its turrets and its treasure chests.
Let's assume that the castle and the turrets and the play area would never be there but for the wand, that the wand is the central feature, the central attraction, but similarly that the wand by itself would not be economically viable absent a setting such as that. Why not include those?
Well,
those,
I mean, that seems like a part
related to our what's the statutory language
with respect to
the article?
Well, I mean, that's certainly a question that could be posed to Congress.
But why isn't it something that is reasonably within the scope of, say, the Commission's own opinions?
Well, the Commission has never gone that far. The only case in which an argument nearly as aggressive as this was presented was the set-top boxes case. Verizon argued that the entire build-out of its Fios network should be attributed to its set-top boxes. And the Commission did not affirm the ALJ's decision. They chose to take no position and focused instead on the simpler argument for appeal. Verizon had a fallback argument as to its repair of the actual boxes and those domestic activities. We didn't have a fallback argument from CK here. With my remaining minute, I'd just like to note that the Commission's decision here can be affirmed based on any one of the four bases for no violation: domestic industry, written description, enablement, and non-infringement. And should the court do so, based on this court's case law, the court needn't reach the other issues. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll hear from Mr. Smith.
May it please the court. Just echoing briefly what Mr. Rosenzweig said, there are four independent bases to support the IPC's decision, each one of which is supported by substantial evidence, and that's the standard before your honors today. And we believe each individual basis is supported by substantial evidence, and any one of which would support the decision of the ITC that there's no finding of violation under Section 337. With that, I want to briefly just focus on the written description issues and really the Section 112 lack of adequate disclosure in the specification for the 714.
I think it's more of a written description problem than an enablement problem.
Both. Your Honor, both.
How would you tease apart the two? I know sometimes they overlap considerably. How would you tease apart the two as applied to this case, and which of them do you think is the more powerful doctrine in your favor?
Your Honor, let me answer the last part of that question first. I think given the factual nature
of this case, in the posture of this case, when substantial evidence, I think the enablement may be the stronger because the credibility determinations and the factual, if there's factual distinctions or there is in conflict, then that the tie goes to the ITC. But I think they're very strong doctrines, and how I would tease that out to answer the first part of your question, this court has been very clear, particularly in Ariat in a number of different cases, the hallmark of possession for written description is disclosure within the four corners of the specification. And this court has been clear in terms of written description and enablement. You just can't rely upon the prior art to say, this is my enabling disclosure, or this is my...
Well, you must rely in part. You can't incorporate 20 volumes of physics texts into your specification.
Sure, Your Honor.
Let's not overstate what needs to be in the specification.
Yes, Your Honor, absolutely. You don't have to put, I think this court has clarified, you don't have to put minor details that are well known in the art into the specification, for example. Let me use an absurd example, how to use a hammer, for instance. But in this case, this goes to the heart of the issue. It is, we had a disclosure here that in the specification that talked about mechanical ball switches, we had detailed figures, we had detailed explanation, and in contrast, we had a laundry list of electronic sensors, within which there was two accelerometers and gyroscopes within a number of other sensors that their own expert didn't even know what those other electronic sensors were doing. That's cited in the ITC opinion in pages 44 and 45.
Your expert seemed to think that they were all common knowledge. Dr. Polish. Is it Polish or Polish?
It's Dr. Polish. Mm-hmm. Your Honor, two points there. Number one, he talked generally about accelerometers and gyroscopes in the art. And number two, he also specifically detailed, and I think it was 50 or 60 pages of written testimony about why it would be undue experimentation to simply put in the accelerometers or the gyroscopes in this mechanical ball switch device, and also why he had thought the inventors weren't in possession. And we know for a fact, Your Honor, that these inventors were not in possession. They ask you to disregard their testimony for written description, but we know they were in fact not in possession of the claims with the electronic sensors and accelerometers and gyroscopes. And this is an important point because, as the ITC found in their decision, is supported by substantial evidence, that in the patent with the mechanical ball switches, if I have a wand, the patent was for a magic wand, and then I did the right spell, there's two balls, one in the tip, one down a little bit below, wired in series. If I do the right motion, one ball goes
up,
one goes down, closes
the circuit. Turn on.
It's an on-off switch. By contrast, what did the ITC, what was the substantial evidence in front of them? It was not only the specification, not only undisputed that the inventors didn't have possession of this invention or know how to enable the electronic switches, they also had in front of them Mr. Holt, they had Dr. Nockra, Dr. Polish, and what did they say? Mr. Holt said it took him 6 months just to take one accelerometer to put it in a wand that he was building for his 9-year-old daughter, a conjure wand. And why was it so difficult? Because this concept of off-on doesn't apply to the accelerometers. The accelerometer measures.
But the accelerometer, their claim is directed to the broader concept and to select a specific detailed manipulation. It might have taken him 9 months. It might take me 90 years to do it. But if, in fact, it is a method, which if there is a method of carrying it out after the patent application is filed, what's your answer to Mr. Barney's position that having stated the function and sufficiently so that it can be performed, that suffices?
I disagree with him from a legal perspective and the factual basis, Your Honor. The legal perspective is, on enablement, it's undue experimentation. And that was the evidence, the substantial evidence that the ITC heard from Mr. Holt, from Dr. Nockra.
To do with using an accelerometer, but perhaps using, as a matter of gyroscope technology, was perhaps more advanced.
There was no testimony, Your Honor, in that regard. If anything, I think Dr. Polish said...
If it was in the prior art, perhaps he didn't need testimony in that regard. And your witness agreed it was in the prior art.
Well, Your Honor, I want to make perfectly clear what our witness, Dr. Polish, said. Two different pieces here. First, what he said was that gyroscopes and accelerometers were known in the art. That's what he said. He didn't say that these specific, and I think this is an important point, these specific configurations that they're claiming in Claim 24, the modular sensors and the sensors in the base, and they each have to react to a different motion, and the base has to also be configured to do particular motions, waving, stroking, so forth and so on. His point was he never said that those points were in the art. And that's
but
a
their
big,
broadest claim isn't that limited.
The broadest claim is limited to a modular attachment.
Yes, but not to the details you've just recited.
Well, the claim itself talks about particular motions, Your Honor, moving, shaking, twisting, stroking, and it talks about two configurations of sensors, one in the base and one in the modular portion, the auxiliary portion, and that they have to attach.
Yes.
Yes. And it's very important, Your Honor, that down below, and I think this is a critical point, down below, they argued that these motion sensor limitations in the Claim 24 were not obvious. And this is at A12027. For example, Dr. Vocek said that Goshi, and we've heard about Goshi from Mr. Barney, Goshi did not meet the auxiliary component limitation that included the motion sensors. So now they're pivoting and embracing the prior art on appeal because obviousness is no longer in the case. We lost that down below. But the critical point was there was the specific configurations of motion sensors in the claim was not found by the commission to be obvious. They've never embraced these particular limitations as being in the prior art and being enabling. For example, Dr. Vocek never said, well, Goshi and Sato are my enabling disclosures. They're the ones that one skilled in the art would look at, and knowing that art would be able to sit there and practice this claim without undue experimentation. He never said that. Dr. Polish, our expert, testified in detail about what would be important to do and how difficult it would be to do it for undue experimentation. The commission looked at Mr. Holt, who was a prior art inventor, looked at Dr. Nakra. And so here we are, Your Honors, in the context of having, is there substantial evidence to support the ITC's decision? Chief Judge Bullock heard from the inventors. He heard from the experts. He heard from Mr. Holt. He heard from Dr. Nakra. And given that whole composite, sure, is there evidence that may support their point of view? Sure, but that's not the standard for review before Your Honors.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Smith.
Thank you.
Mr. Barney, you have your rebuttal time.
I may not need the full time. I just have a couple points, Your Honors. The first is on domestic industry. Judge Bryson, I think you hit the nail on the head. None of these investments would have been made but for the wand. The MagiQuest attraction only operates with the wand. There was something in one of the briefs that said it was an amusement park with rides and food stands. That's not true. It's absolutely not true.
Weren't there some MagiQuest sites that didn't use the wand?
No, Your Honor. First of all, the MagiQuest site that we relied on primarily was the one that's owned and operated by Creative Kingdoms. That's the one that is the bulk of the testimony. There are 15 other licensed MagiQuest attractions in the United States and two additional ones in Japan, and I think there's one in Canada. We didn't rely on those specifically for the investments. We did point out that our largest licensee, Great Wolf Resorts, has invested quite heavily, many millions of dollars in building out their MagiQuest facilities. But we're content to rely on just the wholly owned and operated MagiQuest attraction in Myrtle Beach for our domestic industry because I think the investments there are substantial. And the entire facility, the only thing you do there is play MagiQuest. If we didn't have the wand, that facility never would have been built. None of those investments would have been made. None of the people who were employed there would have jobs. And so this is a classic domestic industry, an American industry built around the patented technology. And I wanted to point out that the stat, and you alluded to it, but the statute says with respect to. That doesn't mean it has to be the patented technology. And in this case, this court last year in InterDigital interpreted with respect to mean related to. And so certainly the MagiQuest attraction is related to the patented wand because it wouldn't exist but for the wand. And that's an undisputed fact. And, in fact, it's even in a footnote in the commission's decision.
How much of what the commission did is factual and how much is legal, in your view, on this issue?
It's a difficult question to answer. It had a gloss of factual, but a lot of the facts that are recited, I believe, are not correct when they say, well, there wasn't evidence of this, there wasn't evidence
of that. Let me ask the question this way, maybe to get what I'm concerned about. What is the core legal error that the commission committed?
Core legal error is a misinterpretation of the domestic industry statute, specifically the phrase with respect to. There seems to be, honestly, an arbitrary and capricious interpretation of that standard. I didn't hear a definition of that standard. We challenged them in our brief. We said, you misinterpreted those words. I didn't hear anything from the ITC in their briefs or here today as to what the actual interpretation of those words are. The standard that they use is, I know it when I see it. And every case seems to come out differently. Our case is very clearly with respect to the patented technology, because none of those investments would have been made but for the patented technology. Thank you, Your Honors.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you all. The case is taken under submission.